Before we begin today's podcast, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Covaris. Covaris is reinventing what you expect from a medical professional liability provider. By leveraging claims data and analytics, Covaris is helping doctors and administrators reduce distractions and focus on improving outcomes. To learn more, please visit covaris.com/focus.
This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by two leaders from Phoenix Children's Hospital. Phoenix Children's Hospital has made itself into one of the elite children's pediatric centers in the country. We're thrilled to have with us Dr. Vinay Vaidya, who is the CMIO and a former intensivist, magnificent physician and leader, and Dr. Deanne Ostley, who's the surgeon in chief. We're going to at Phoenix Children's. We're going to talk today about how they've handled COVID and surgical volumes and what they're seeing. We'll also talk about what advice they have for other health systems and other leaders, and then their top priorities today. Dr. Vaidya, take a moment to introduce yourself, and then I'll ask Dr. Ostler to do the same.
Good morning, and thanks, Scott, for having myself and Dan to discuss this important topic. As you mentioned, I am the Chief Medical Information Officer and the Senior Vice President here at Phoenix Children's Hospital. I've been here for about 12 years, and COVID, as you know, posed unprecedented challenges across every aspect of healthcare, and I'm excited to share some of our stories with your audience today.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Ostley?
Good morning, Scott. Thanks. I echo what Vinay just said. It's a pleasure to be here and share our experiences. My name is Dan Ostley. I'm the surgeon in chief at Phoenix Children's Hospital. My role actually encompasses a bit more than just surgical services. It also includes several centers of excellence, including the Heart Center, neurosciences, intensive care units, and surgery, as well as research and education. And as Vinay said, COVID has had an impact in all those areas, and I'd like to emphasize the importance of being able to share our experiences, hopefully to help other institutions learn from what we learned.
Well, fantastic, and thank you. Vinay, let me start with you. Talk a little bit about COVID and what you've seen with surgical volumes and how you handled it. A few thoughts there on what you're seeing.
Sure, Scott. Phoenix Children's Hospital, like many other hospitals across various states, experienced a period when there was a moratorium on elective surgeries. And that was obviously done to preserve PPE, as well as keep bed volumes available for the possible surge in COVID admissions and ICU admissions. So we here in Arizona experienced a six-week moratorium on elective surgeries lasting from around March 19th through May 1st. So what that resulted was a significant backlog of all the surgeries, and it was about 3,000 plus. And when the moratorium was lifted, that added to the new surgeries that were getting scheduled each day. So this was a challenge that we had not faced ever before on how to handle this backlog, how to do it efficiently, safely, and in a methodical manner. So that was the challenge that faced us around May 1st of this year.
And talk for a second, Vinay, you know, there's been recent, you had moratoriums in many, many states. There's been recent surges again in states. Do you expect or do you worry about another moratorium at some point?
Yes, and that is so true because the COVID pandemic by no means has reached a steady state in any part of the world. So we really have to be prepared for it to yo-yo wildly. And the experience that we gained in the last 4 or 5 months, I think should prepare us for wide swings of the pendulum in either direction. So I think, we cannot take it for granted. We cannot look at the numbers going down and be complacent. And we are ready for, anything that it throws us.
Yes, fantastic. And Dr. Ostley, some of your thoughts on surgical volume and COVID-19 and what you're seeing and the re-ramping back up and how busy you've stayed. Talk to us a little bit about your response and how you've seen it play through.
Sure, Scott. As Vinay said, we lost not only all the cases that were scheduled in that 6 weeks period of time, but we also transitioned quickly to a telehealth platform, and we continued to schedule cases during the moratorium on elective surgeries. And so we had a significant hurdle when we came back to how do we go forward and get patients back in the hospital safely, i.e. COVID test everybody, prioritize patients with regard to who needs to have their operation first, who should be delayed, et cetera. So we actually created a mechanism by which we ranked operations 1, 2, and 3 based upon patient need, hospital census, inpatient volume, and the surgeons were very actively involved individually to look at their caseloads and say, this is a 1, this is a 2, this is a 3. And then that allowed the schedulers to go back and Vinay created a dashboard that allowed the schedulers to search based upon 1, 2, and 3. And within a short period of time, we recognized a couple of things. Number one, our scheduling process was very cumbersome. That was probably unique that we actually recognized that in a children's hospital, because I think in the adult side, they didn't have that problem because they were dealing with managing COVID patients, and we didn't have COVID patients to manage, so we were actually trying to get back to surgical volumes. But needless to say, we overcame that, and with the ability to prioritize and then having full force moving forward with regard to the schedulers themselves, we were able to jump back. In May, we were still down around 32%, but June and July, we actually did more operations than we did in 2019. We did like 166 more operations in June and July of 2020 than we did in 2019. So the process had to be nimble, somewhat streamlined, and there was 100% all hands on deck with regard to the surgeons and proceduralists to identify the patients that needed to be moved along as quickly as possible.
And how hard was it, and who got input into developing the ranking system, the A, B, and C? Because it's so important for triaging and prioritizing, but can be politically charged internally. How did you work through that?
Great question, Scott. So there was a group of three people, myself, the vice president of the perioperative services, and then the head of the anesthesia group. And what we did is we looked at the cases 1 week ahead, and we said, okay, this patient doesn't look like it's a 1. Why is it being done here? And then it was my responsibility as a surgeon chief to email the surgeon and say, Dr. X, you have a patient on for next Thursday that doesn't appear to fall into the category 1. Can you please email back a justification about why this patient needs to be done this week? And it allowed us to vet the process, but it also immediately added accountability to the providers, knowing that somebody was looking over their shoulder. It took us about 4 to 6 weeks to really get people to understand, hey, big brother, maybe that's not the appropriate term, but somebody's watching what you're doing. And since everybody's understood that there's check and balances associated with the scheduling process, we haven't really seen that happen over the last 2 months with regard to the scheduling process.
And wasn't that fascinating? And the surgeons, of course, want to get their cases scheduled. Everybody thinks their patient needs surgery as quickly as possible, whatever it needs. And there's a whole ton of reasons for that, mostly 98% legitimate. They want their patient to get taken care of. What was the feedback from surgeons as you started to tell them, you know, are you sure this has to be a 1 or maybe it should be a 2? What was the feedback you got? Were they pretty understanding or was it challenging?
I think overall it was very understanding. There were some challenges, not surprising, as you said, especially surgeons, and they're fairly dominant personalities, and they you know, often wrong but never in doubt. So early on there was some pushback, but then I think as we work through the issues with them, okay, we need to maintain PPE. We need to be able to keep our hospital full with regard to inpatient census. We need to make sure other patients are taken care of, and we have to maintain the ability to take care of COVID people if they come. It was a gradual process, but eventually they got it, and now we're at a point where we don't have to worry about it, so we can now refocus our emphasis back to saying, okay, the ENT surgeons took a hit because they couldn't be doing every tonsil and every adenoid. We now can recognize in the ambulatory surgery center, we can put more focus on making sure we catch up there than we necessarily have been in the past, because we're kind of through the initial stages of the pandemic. Like Vinay said, we're not through it all the way, but we're at a point at least where we can manage all the surgical volume we need to at this point without any difficulty.
Thank you. And Vinay, you've had this magnificent career. You spread the balance between being a leader and a CMIO, and a great physician. What advice do you have for other leaders in sort of dealing with these issues, whether at a children's hospital or a regular acute or adult acute care hospital? What advice do you have for others?
Sure, Scott. And again, we do not have any magic bullets or magic solution. We just repurpose the basic principles that we understand very well. I think it would be an understatement to say that COVID is not a solo sport, right? I mean, it has, posed so many challenges to teamwork that has to, and if you look at surgery, it is an extremely complex process to schedule a surgery, even under ordinary circumstances. The surgeon decides the surgery, the family has to plan for it, insurance has to authorize it, testing has to be done before, the scheduling has to be done, anesthesia has to be contacted. So all those things are elements of data flow. And we realize that data really is the center of all this efficiency. And if we can manage that data flow effectively, we can capture it, we can display it, we can make it actionable, and we can have one source of truth. Then we can track this entire complex process as it is, that was made magnitudes more complex by the COVID. It provides levels of efficiency that we never had in the pre-COVID stage. So really, one part of my advice is, again, it is a cliche, but it is never let a crisis go, never let that opportunity go. And our effort in surgical volumes really exemplified that. Teamwork was there, data was there, displaying actionable information, replacing inefficient processes and Excel files and emails and phone calls, and aligning the entire enterprise through one vision, one visibility is what helped us not only reach our surgical volumes, but like Dan said, we exceeded our surgical volumes for June and July.
And so let me ask you another question, Vinay. How important is it, this integration of the CMIO role with the people leading the surgical departments to make sure these things work together? Because this ranking system of triaging doesn't really work well unless you've integrated well with the information system, does it?
You're absolutely right, Scott. And, we talk about hardware, software. I think the most important is the peopleware. And Dan will tell you that his office is across mine. Of course, with COVID, we were not so much face-to-face. But what that stresses and exemplifies is that no solution, whether it's information technology-based or amazing dashboards, none of it works unless there is that collaborative interaction. So I feel really fortunate and privileged that just like Dan is using his knife as a tool to make an impact, my team has been lucky to use information technology. And you cannot operate with information technology in a hospital as an island of excellence by itself. That island of excellence is of no use if it doesn't interact with the clinical folks. So all throughout my career, what I found really works is small steps that are constantly with end user input and small reiterative changes that make us nimble and quick, produce successful solutions rather than, an engineer producing an IT solution that is non-workable or non-usable.
And Dan, your thoughts on advice for other leaders. I mean, Vinay has pressed hard on information plus people plus the surgeons and really working together, and truly has to be a team effort to make this work. Some of your advice yourself for other leaders.
Yeah, it's the hurdle that we face is implementing and overcoming the challenge of change, and doctors and general are maybe not the best at that. But what I would say is you need to embrace it. If COVID showed us nothing, it did show us that if we don't change, we die. And so the ability to change is going to be what separates us from a successful organization versus an unsuccessful organization. And that change is across the spectrum of the organization. So that may mean patient interactions. It may be how you embrace IT. It may be how we schedule surgeries. But you've got to look at change as something that is inevitable. And I like to liken it to a lecture I heard from a chairman of surgery several years ago, and it said his point was, you need to look at situations as solvable. And he talked about Ted Williams being able to hit a fastball and bat 400 and how he did it. And he asked Ted Williams, how did you do that? And he said, well, I just saw the ball as hittable. And so we need to be thinking about solving problems in organizations as hittable and getting through to the point that we can do this if we're all in this together. We accept the fact that we are not going to stay the same organism, but that we're going to change and we're going to change for the better, and we will end up on a better place on the other side of this experience. But if you just try and sit back and do what you did for the last decade, you're going to really struggle being successful.
Dan, let me ask you two follow-up questions to what you said. First, Ted Williams is one of the most famous 400 hitters of all time. In fact, there's a famous story about him playing the last game of a season where he could have just rested on his laurels, but played the game to try and keep on hitting and to hit above 400. So famous, famous hitter, the greatest of all time. If in surgery, do you ever say to your baseball friends, look, he was the greatest player of all time and hit 400, but as a surgeon, I have to hit 99.9% correct to be great. Do you ever say that to your baseball friends?
Yeah, exactly. It's a great analogy. Yeah, we don't have the luxury of striking out 6 out of 10 times or not hitting 6 out of 10 times. Yeah,
exactly. And then the second important question, Dr. Vadea is got this famous situation where his last name in his native language means doctor. So the great question for you is, does Ostley mean anything similar in whatever native language that was originally?
Unfortunately, it's not that cool. It's Norwegian, and so my grandparents were from Norway, and so it's Ostli, and Ost is east in Norwegian, and Li is slope. So evidently the family farm lied on an east slope of some fjord in Norway, so I'm not near as cool in terms of regard to my last name as Vene is.
Well, that's a pretty good story, though. East slope on the fjord is pretty good, Vinay.
Yeah.
Yes. Scott, I must confess something. I just told you the meaning of my last name, and I withheld the meaning of my first name, Vinay, and that means modest, and I hold your thoughts on that. So I don't want to die
with it. you're the fabulously modest physician, fabulously modest doctor, and all that Dan gets is east slope of the fjord.
I mean, exactly.
That seems unfair. Anyways, I have to tell the both of you, Vinay, Dan, just a pleasure to visit with you and hear what a magnificent job Phoenix Children's Hospital is doing. Just magnificent. Thank you both so much for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We'll look for getting a chance to visit with you further in the future. Thank you very
much. Thanks, Scott. It was our pleasure.
Thank you, Scott. It was a pleasure to share our story, and we are always excited to, you know, partner with you and get all the latest news in healthcare IT from Becker's.